Episode 27 in the bag this week. We did The Karate Kid and Breaking Bad Habits. Billy, what are we going to learn this week?
How much theory I can fit into just one scene where Mr. Miyagi tells Daniel about wax on, wax off, how do we break bad habits in kids that we're trying to improve upon with instilling healthy, good ones.
It felt like we were in Billy's dojo this week, learning a little bit. It wasn't as aggressive as Cobra Kai, so it was nice to be here, I'm not going to lie. Great episode, lots of fun, and super actionable tips. Make sure you listen and make sure you send through some questions to us as well. Enjoy, guys.
Hi, I'm Billy, a developmental pediatrician.
And I'm Nick, a developing parent.
We're going to use scenes from iconic movies to talk about how we best support our kids.
This is Pop Culture Parenting.
Hey, don't let your mother smell that beer on your breath. She'll take it out on me.
Daddy, and what does it do?
Just use your best judgment to trust you.
Hello, Billy. Welcome to episode 27. How are you, mate?
I'm good. Really good, actually. It's a Monday, but pretty emotional Monday.
Oh, really? Why so?
Two reasons.
Go on.
You sound so intrigued to know.
You always got a zinger. We chat for an hour before the episode and then you drop this. Go on.
Actually, they're both serious. But I had clinic this morning and just met some nice families, but especially this one dad who has just got a teenage boy who has a lot of neurodevelopmental disability and really struggles with kind of any self-care. And, you know, imagine how hard that is. And this dad was just like so genuinely like fiercely advocating for his son, caring for his son, saw the beautiful stuff in him. And I was just like, I can't believe I get paid for this to like meet this kid, meet this dad and try and help. It's just, yeah. So it was really cool. It was actually because I'll talk about it a little bit with the Griswolds, but it was just really nice to meet him and kind of see that.
Yeah. Just
really inspiring.
Not to label or anything. I'm just trying to get what's neurodiverse? What are those sorts of things?
This boy that I might know. Yeah, no. So sorry. This boy has severe intellectual disability and severe autism.
Okay.
And just has, I can't really communicate that well. Has just been having a hard time, been pretty sick lately. And this dad has just kind of gone through the whole system and is, you know, everything's siloed, the clinics and who's looking after what, who's talking to what. He's just navigating it amazingly and just really positive. And you got no sense of him feeling kind of like
overwhelmed.
It was just like, kept checking in with this boy and was like talking about him in a really beautiful way. And I was just like, wow. It's just so inspiring. It's really funny, the job that we do. I often talk about with the trainees about this, about we need to think more actively about what a privilege it is to be invited into the world of these families.
Mm-hmm.
They share stuff with you and that they don't talk with anyone else about, their fears, their concerns. You get to have an insight into what that world is like. And it's almost like you just get all the good bits because you just kind of get to help. And they hold all of the burden and all of the hardship and you just get to kind of see if you can be of benefit to them.
Add a bit of value.
Yeah, so it was amazing. So that was the start of my emotional day. The
All right, go on.
End of my emotional day was went and saw a very beautiful emotional movie in Top Gun Maverick, which is not the movie of the episode, but God, I love it. I liked it more the second time. I got emotional both times.
All right, fine. All right, so you've been telling me, yes, and you've been singing the song for the last hour while we've been sitting here, and you know I haven't seen it, and you know I want to see it. And
yet, I'm not ruining anything by singing the song. Hopefully I'm motivating you, Nick, to be a bit selfish and go and see it, because it was actually good.
Self-care.
Self-care. Ooh. It was actually really good for me and my partner, because it's a Monday.
Yeah.
But we both of us didn't have clinic in this afternoon, and Annalise had worked a long shift on the weekend. So I was like, let's spoil ourselves. And Evie was in daycare. You taught me this trick, and we
Don't throw me under.
No, in a good way. You taught me like that. That can be an opportunity for you to do nice stuff with your partner.
Yeah,
because obviously evenings are almost impossible, and especially when there's no family or babysitters or anyone. And yeah, we had a wine and watched Top Gun, and it is just we're going to do Top Gun probably in like 20 years when we're looking back.
Well, we could do Top Gun 1.
Definitely, but Maverick is a better movie, and it's this beautiful movie. Like, people out there who haven't seen it, it's a beautiful movie. This is also a beautiful movie about redemption and forgiveness.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's really amazing.
I'm just looking for, like, dogfights and jet fighters. And
they're
like
there too, but possibly some tears as well.
Really?
Yeah.
I cried. I would have cried multiple times the first one when Goose went.
Yeah.
That was a bit much. I was watching that at a pretty young age, though.
Yeah. That's also a great movie, but yeah, I reckon the second one's even better.
You know what else is a great movie?
Karate Kid.
Karate Kid is a great film.
It's good.
Yep.
And I definitely want to get to the flick, but I feel like you've got a – didn't you say that you had a – did you have a Winslow or a Griswold?
I've got a Griswold.
Okay.
No, mine's a Griswold. So we'll go to Clark W. right now.
Hey. Don't let your mother smell that beer on your breath. She'll take it out on me.
Okay, hit me with it.
Oh, Griswold. So I was cleaning yesterday with the kid next to me under watch. On Dad's watch, there was an accident. Someone went headfirst off the couch into the tiles. Now, that's not the Griswold in itself, although, it was the post that was where I didn't shine. And so someone went straight out of the chair into some tiles and came up, and I thought they had soot on their head. I was like, oh, they'll be fine, dusted off, because it was near the fireplace.
Wasn't dusting off.
But it was my reaction. Henry's like, that's not coming off. I'm like, oh, it'll come off. And I was just really defensive and wasn't aggressive. I was just like, nah, she'll be right. Like, it's fine, you know, and was like – and it was like, and then obviously I sort of looked at it again and was like, oh, it's not coming off. And it was the first true shiner to either one of my girls. And then I had to stare at it all day at the birthday parties I was at on the train rides. And I don't think I've taken that many photos of my daughter in a day for probably a year, because we're at this great party at this miniature train thing. And it's just shiner after shiner. So it was on Dad's watch, but it was also, I think I was dismissive because I didn't want it to be the shiner, and that was it. I thought it was just, oh, it's just, that'll rub off. And then obviously as you rub it, it wasn't, so it was probably making it a bit sore for her. I just wasn't great in that moment. And then
it's
got
a tough
to
balance,
it.
Isn't it? Yeah, between minimising things and
that's what I,
so that they don't kind of have
exactly.
this.
Exactly.
And they go, oh my God, if Dad's feeling like that about that fall, I'm also going to be really worked up. But
We don't put photos of the kids on Instagram because
it doesn't fit with that thing.
I sent you the photo. I was like,
such a trooper though. She's just so happy in all of her.
Yeah, but I was in that mode of like, oh, let's keep her awake for the next few hours because it's not good. A big shiner. So yeah, not my finest moment. No Winslows to speak of this week. So I might just throw it to you. You got a grizzy?
Definitely got a Griswold, and it's a bit the same as yours, not a fall, but yeah, I did a bit of solo parenting and the week it's just gone because Annalise had some long shifts, and they're tough days, especially when you're working, and I got to the end of the day and I was like, geez, I'm doing pretty well today. So I was like, do you know what I'm going to do? Giving myself a bit of a pat on the back. I'll put her in the bath, sit with her, enjoy sitting on the tiles in the bathroom, and I'll have a beer. And so I'm sitting there having a beer. It got to the point where I was like, is this time to get out? But I was so comfortable just like playing with her and having a beer and stuff.
Yeah.
Check the water. It's still warm enough. And then, the classic poo in the bath.
Ooh.
So, I stayed too long.
Yeah, you overstayed your welcome.
And, of course, Dad's on watch, so there's 30 toys in the tub.
Oh.
I learned
the battleship.
But you know how life, just like when you're patting yourself on the back, is very good at reminding yourself that no, you are fallible.
Change, it moves fast, huh?
Yeah.
It really does.
So, exactly. It's just a roller coaster, isn't it? Which is, makes me think we need to get back to parenthood. But anyway.
You've got a yin to that yang, Billy?
Yes, I do.
I don't object to fun. I love fun. In fact, I'm the grand funk master of fun.
Give it to me.
Yeah, so maybe not me being the grand funk master of fun, but and there's almost kind of like a Griswold aspect to this where Evie's been kind of, she's 14 months and she's been like a little bit behind with her development, like no kind of words yet, no steps yet. And the developmental pediatrician in me is like, that's fine. The parent in me is like, oh, my God, what does this mean? You know.
Glad 20 years of studies like clouding yeah, your judgment. Yeah.
So classic, like, you know, can teach it but struggle to live it. But anyway, so the actual Winslow of it is that I had a tough day at work, and I have very rare tough days at work. I'm talking like one in 5 years. Like is a tough day at work.
You're lucky.
Yeah, I'm so lucky. I've done so many different jobs, and being a developmental pediatrician, I've never not had a good day at work. Like outside of, I reckon,
good
6 days, and one of them was recently. And it's yeah, my boss said to me at the end of it, he's like, "Just go and give Evie a hug." And I went inside, and I was just really deflated. Well, got home, sorry, and went inside, and was really deflated, and just kind of said hi to Evie, and yeah, she just looked at me and took her first steps. And I was like, oh, man. And it was just good. This amazing win of just like, I'm sure she didn't obviously pick up that I was having a tough time. And she's like, it's probably time.
Father, I'm coming to you.
Yeah.
But they do. Oh, I don't know about that. People think that, well, my partner always is like, they just know when like you're at breaking point a bit.
Yeah. Okay.
And they give you something. Or maybe you see something in that moment. Obviously, your sort of steps are easy to see, but she was always like, they know when you're at breaking point and then they sleep eventually or they do something. They can sense.
Well, it's funny, isn't it? Because we often talk about how it's really important we're there for our kids, but actually they're there for us a lot. You know? And that's, I mean, this whole podcast is about trying to make it more enjoyable, easier, you know, all of the aspects of parenting that we enjoy to really highlight them and minimize the stuff that's hard. And it was just such a good example of like the world being tough, but Evie being a bit of a sanctuary for me. So yeah, that's my
just listening to us makes that all better.
So So no, it was that was a really good one. But yeah, sorry. So that was my Winslow, which was lovely.
It must be nice.
Mm.
I must have had some Winslows, but I'm just not remembering them in this moment.
Yeah, you definitely have. I'm trying to think what we've done. Sure. Mate, you've been, speaking of your Winslows.
Oh, yeah, go on.
You've been rolling on the mats a fair bit, which relates to topic.
Yes, it does relate to the topic. Yes, I've been doing a bit of jiu-jitsu recently, but it does relate to our topic of Karate Kid and Breaking Bad Habits.
Yeah.
Great title. Well done, Billy.
Great title.
Can't deny it. It's a good one.
Great movie as well.
Great movie. Sensational. Daniel San. 80s. How good.
California. Yeah, 84.
Boy from Jersey. Yeah. Goes from East Coast to West Coast, cross country.
Yep.
Brings that West Coast sass with him. He's fantastic in there.
Yeah, I actually don't think his performance is that amazing. I also think his character's a bit annoying.
Oh, his character, he agitates.
Yeah. Yeah, he's just, I don't know, it's a bit like, it reminds me of Ferris Bueller. He's just this like confident kid. That, you know, I mean, I'm biased. I don't meet those kids in clinic, but just how confidently he like goes in and like starts chatting up the pretty girl and like, you know, defends himself against the bullies and takes on 5 of them. And I'm just like,
isn't that just a resilient child?
Reframe. Stay on topic.
Okay, sorry.
But, no, well, it is. What we're talking about is it actually is important to know, define the difference between resilience and habits because, resilience is a completely different thing to habits.
Yeah.
And what we're going to talk about today is something that is really prevalent through the movie in the amazing character of Mr. Miyagi.
Ah, Mr. Miyagi. Yes, he's fantastic.
He's fantastic. And you probably know the story about him, the actor.
No, I don't. Go on.
So he's a comedian, Happy Days. He was in Happy Days.
Yeah, he was, yes.
And the guys casting the Karate Kid Arthur. Didn't want him because they're like, we need someone serious. And they just kept passing him by and like finally gave him a shot at an audition. He knocked it out of the park and then he was nominated for Best Supporting Actor.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
Mr. Miyagi.
Yeah, Mr. Miyagi. Probably because of the scene, which we're not using today, where he's reflecting back on losing his wife and child.
Yep.
which is this really amazing backstory to Mr. Miyagi. And Mr. Miyagi is this character that we meet in the film. Probably everyone knows the story. But essentially, Daniel-san kind of comes to this new environment and struggles. And classic martial arts movie kind of formula where it's injustice, training montage, revenge. Which is like pretty much 90% of the movies I watched growing up. And it still exists. That's what Mulan does. That's what Kung Fu Panda does.
Kung Fu Panda's so good like
that. Yeah, but same thing. Like injustice, training, revenge.
Like, so good.
They all do it. And Karate Kid is amazing because that's Daniel's journey. But what we see in Mr. Miyagi is that he has this different kind of lens through which he views martial arts in the way that he lives his life. You see him trying to catch the flies with the chopstick.
Yep.
How much his kind of habit has formed in his life. Yep. He's got this home and he kind of then welcomes in. We see it with the bonsai trees as well. He cultivates bonsais and has habits around that. And he kind of has this real balance. And he comes from, I went a little bit deep on this, but there's two kind of forms of martial arts. There's his, which is, you know, rightfully from the part of Japan that his story is from, the characters. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of not really about belts and it's all about like having that kind of principle through your whole life.
Yep.
And then we see the opposing Cobra Kai style, which is, you know, much more aggressive and about, you know, there's no, what is it? There's, you know, you don't give any kind of leniency.
Yep.
Or you give no kind of avenue for retreat to your opponent. The interesting thing about, I don't know if you know, that form of martial arts that is in Cobra Kai, but that was actually...
Kyokushin?
Yeah, it's got a name that I can't remember, but it came from a lot of the way it came to the West was a lot of the guys in the Korean War were exposed to it and brought it back, including Chuck Norris.
Yep.
So Chuck Norris
is sensational, yeah.
Trainer, yeah, but it's really funny. Karate Kid opened up this avenue for a martial arts movie in Western culture. So, you know, this is where we saw kind of Chuck Norris and Jackie Chan, Jet Li, Van Damme.
Mm-hmm.
All these guys really became prominent after The Karate Kid because it was this kind of mainstream movie that's similar to kind of E.T. and those just captured everyone. But it normalized and showed us the benefits of martial arts and that discipline and habits and things that we're going to talk about. So, and yeah, I wonder what the influence was on you going into Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
It's probably more blood sport with Van Damme.
Great movie. It's going to be a tough Kumite. One for me to put a topic
well,
to.
Well, let's not write it off straight away. I feel like, no, there's some parenting elements in there for Frank Dukes.
Because there's the two kids.
That's right.
That kid who plays Jean-Claude Van Damme's character as a kid is probably one of the worst actors I've ever seen in a movie. Anyone who knows Bloodsport, when they flash back to them being kids, my gosh.
Cuts the brim off his hat.
That must have been the director's son or something because it is awful. But so Daniel-san's not that bad.
No, Daniel-san's not that bad. No, look, Danny LaRusso is a good character. And if those of you who kind of have picked up Cobra Kai and watched that, I mean, I've watched two seasons of it. I quite like it. Like Ralph Macchio is good. Like he's I think he's a good actor. He obviously didn't do a ton of stuff otherwise. Outside of that, I'm not sure where it sort of stopped and end for old Ralph, but yeah, I really liked him. I thought as an actor he was good.
Yeah, and what's the blonde kid's name? What's his character?
Johnny. Put him in a body bag, Johnny.
So you know the actor who played Johnny actually stuck with martial arts from the movie.
Oh, really?
So yeah, which is what we're going to talk about, like how do you build habits, how do you build healthy habits. Yeah, so but he, you know, was captivated personally by martial arts and stayed with it. The actor that played Daniel-san is just like, yeah, I'm this huge proponent and a catalyst for martial arts. Never got into it.
He's got a great crane kick though.
So, yeah, the crane kick. So it's it's just a really cool movie. And last bit of trivia. Do you know the song You're the Best?
You're the man.
Yeah, for the montage of the tournament.
Mm.
Do you know that song was written and they tried to get it into Rocky 3, but it got beaten by Eye of the Tiger?
Oh. Bit of Survivor, I love that.
Yeah, I know. They tried to get it into Footloose, but it got beaten by You're a maniac, Yeah, so isn't that funny? And then it got Karate Kid.
Nothing was keeping that down. You're the best.
Yeah, because I think Eye of the Tiger and You're a Maniac are such better songs.
Oh, Eye of the Tiger, iconic.
Yeah, Rocky 3. So we'll have to do that one as well. Yeah. But yes. Yeah, so.
But it is worth mentioning Elizabeth Shue as well.
Of course.
Tremendous. Of course. Tremendous. Yeah. All the curls.
Yeah.
that was very much of the era.
Yeah, she's phenomenal. And in really some good. Other great movies of that era. So. Yeah,
and later.
Yeah, she probably had the biggest career out of the actors in this movie.
Yeah, for
she?
Sure.
Yeah.
Undoubtedly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Dominated in that mid-90s. The Saint.
Yeah, Back to the Future.
Fear and Loathing. Not Fear and Loathing. Nicolas Cage won. When Nicolas Cage won Best Actor.
Oh, he's only been in 500 movies.
Something about Vegas. Leaving Las Vegas, I think, mate.
Okay. Like that.
Can't remember.
Yeah. Oh, Cocktail?
Cocktail. Oh, my God.
We should do Cocktail.
Has twins at the end, yeah. It could be about having twins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the...
Spoiler.
The foils of... the foils of... mentors. Because,
Brian Brown.
Brian Brown. Yeah, great movie.
We're doing Cocktail.
Yeah, we should do that.
Such a good one. I'd love to just watch that.
Have we done a Tom Cruise movie yet?
Surely.
God, right? Like, I don't know, we're at 15, 16.
How
movies,
have we not?
Episode 27. But anyway, we'll have to find
sorry.
One. So, no.
We get lost.
So, the topic, though, and what we'll come back to the movie.
Talking about habits.
Come back to the movie a lot. The reason that we're talking about habits for this as our next topic, light topic, which I don't think any of them are really light, because, like, what we're trying is to improve outcomes for kids, so it's hard to think of that as a light thing.
Yeah, we improve outcomes for kids, so it makes life easier for parents.
Totally, but it's just that kind of thing. But we've done some really heavy stuff lately, so I wanted to do something that's a bit proactive. So we're going to talk about breaking bad habits, but we're going to also talk about building healthy and good habits. The reason is because in our childhood is where a lot of our habits get built.
Okay.
And then they go on and determine kind of our behaviours as adults around things like, you know, the food and drinks that we consume.
How early on?
Oh, really early on. So we kind of know that one of the biggest things, which we'll talk about, is the influence of others around us, our parents and our peers. And habits kind of, there's two things that really have a big influence on habits is repetition, which we see wax on, wax off.
Wax off.
You know, paint the fence. Watch, there's all this other stuff he does, isn't there? And then imitation, which we see in The Karate Kid as well. So I'm watching him do the crane kick and all that stuff. And so
and doing some sort of Tai Chi as well.
Yeah, well, the reason that imitation is really important early childhood is because kids are often kind of seeing what their parents are doing and going, cool, that's how, you know, my mum does this, that's how my dad does that.
Certainly mimic, yes.
Yeah, exactly, and especially around kind of the ways that they handle stress, the ways they look after themselves, the things that they do. And we kind of know that the formulation of habits obviously becomes something that is always at least partially kind of automatic or involuntary. So you're not actively thinking about, you know, cool, I need to do this. And the classic example is like brushing your teeth. I can't go to bed without brushing my teeth. I can't start my day without brushing my teeth, but it doesn't take me a lot of motivation. And that's
you just do it.
Yeah, well, I just have to do it because it's a habit and I associate it with the start of my day and I associate it with the end of my day. And the good thing about habits is that they don't take a lot of energy or effort to make them occur because you've started associating cues with the behaviour and then you get the sense of reward. So I don't have to kind of motivate myself to brush my teeth or do a lot of other things that are really good. I also, you know, don't have to kind of motivate myself to do some unhealthy habits that I have as well, and a lot of those have been kind of developed when I was much younger than I am now.
Oh, really? Such as? What's an unhealthy habit?
I mean, the classic one is, you know, feeling... So you can kind of have internal or external cues.
Yep.
Like an external cue is kind of like you get home from work, you kind of throw the bag down and just relax on the couch and pick up your phone. And you're just like, cool, I've walked in. This is what I do here. This is what I do now. I guess an internal one is like stress and going, cool, my cue is stress. My behavior is alcohol. I have wine. And then,
my cue is stress, my behaviour is alcohol. Okay.
So if you think of any kind of habit formation forms around a cue.
Uh-huh.
So I've got home from, I've walked in the front door and I've thrown my bag down. Or stress, you know, I'm really, there's just so much going on and I'm stressed internally. That's either of your two cues. Then you have your behaviour. I sit on the couch and look at my phone for an hour because I've just got home and I got cued coming through the front door. Or I'm stressed and I'm tense. So my behavior from that cue is that I have a glass of wine. And then your reward is that, you know, for the wine one, is that I have reduced stress because I'm having wine and it's kind of distracting me and I'm not having to focus on the stress. And the phone is the same, like getting at the end of the day and scrolling on the phone, it's rewarding your kind of behavior in saying that that feels good, it gives me instant stimulus and all that stuff. And the problem is that the really far away bad feeling of the next day going, God, I spent an hour on the phone yesterday just on the couch, isn't tied to the behavior. So that's the problem. What we tie to the behavior is often the thing that reinforces the habit.
Okay.
And then it feeds back to the cue. So you go, yep, cool. I was stressed. I got a glass of wine. I didn't feel as stressed. Whereas there's obviously healthier things that you can be doing to reduce stress than having a glass of wine. It's not that there's something wrong with having a glass of wine.
Sure isn't.
Yeah, but that's a behavior, you know. And I think especially in even if you think about, I don't know what it was like for you growing up, but I couldn't socialize without alcohol as like in my late teens and 20s. And I still struggle a bit with that because I'm like, that's just what
it's just a habit.
Yeah, I've got a habit of associating with that. But those habits are really hard to break. And especially for kids, like there's a lot of bad habits that they have, whether it's like swearing or, you know, throwing stuff when they're angry and things like that. And they're not consciously sitting there going, I'm angry, I'm going to swear. Or, you know, I just didn't get what I want, so I'm going to throw a plate. They're just, the cue is, you know, I didn't get what I want, so I felt stressed, I was angry. The behavior is that. And the reward that they get is mum or dad comes in. You know, and they don't care if mum or dad comes in upset. They go, cool, the anger is alleviated because mum came and gave me a cuddle because dad kind of, you know, got upset, came into us or whatever. And that unintentionally reinforces that behavior, whereas it's not, we've got to remember that kids aren't thinking there and sitting there and processing all those things really quickly.
Yeah, they're just all emotion.
Mm. And it's an amazing bit of history around this as well. So if you think about like the Middle Ages, which is like 5th to 15th century, you know, a long time ago, but we used to think of kids as just little adults, and that's why a lot of the Middle Ages paintings and stuff, you know how they're all like, the kids are just like little adults, just like they all look really weird because it's just like a smaller version of the adults in all the photos. And that wasn't because they didn't know how to draw or paint. They were some of the best painters, you know, of history. It was because people used to see kids as, you know, adults that just needed to grow. They didn't see them as kind of, you know,
adolescents.
Yeah, well, or children or infants. They were all kind of, and that's what we know, that that's what happened pre-printing press, kind of 15th, 16th century. Kids just used to get sent off to work when they were 6 or 7 years of age. It was like, sweet, go work the field, go learn how to, you know, do this or that, you know, obviously labor and a lot of trade stuff. And especially by 12. Then what happened is kind of the world changed, where we realized the value through things like printing press and, you know, things like that. We realized the value of an education. And one of the biggest kind of proponents of this was a guy called John Locke, who was kind of 17th century. He really interesting guy that kind of had a childhood that had a lot of Christianity into it. He was kind of pressured to go on and become a priest.
Yep.
But went on and, you know, of course, the reason I love him, he went on and did medicine. And kind of became one of the godfathers of developmental psychology.
When was this?
This is like 17th century, late 17th century. So he's the reason, because he's one of the first people that talks about the influence of environment on kids and influencing their habit formation. And he's the person who was the first person to start talking about learning theory and about how repetition and imitation that we talked about before can form our behaviors, especially our habits.
Makes sense.
Really interesting guy. So he, but without going kind of too much into his history, yeah, he's the guy that, have you ever heard of tabula rasa? What? Just means blank slate. And he was the first guy that said kids are born with a blank slate. Because we used to think like you were born and you will have your beliefs about religion, you'll have your morals imprinted upon you, and your lot in life is kind of predicted at your birth. Whereas he was the first person to push back a bit and say, actually, you can go on and be whatever you want. It's really important that we give kids the opportunity to thrive by making sure they've got rich environments.
So you can rise to the court.
up in the court. Yeah, or wherever you want to be, you know, wealthy merchant, a scholar, yeah, whatever. And that was really different because the aristocratic kind of wealth in society would really push back against that and went, no, 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 it's my kids are going to be the ones that do well. The peasant kids are going to keep toiling, you know. And so he was really forward-thinking for his time when you think about, you know, how many centuries ago he was kind of talking about stuff. And a lot of his original theories, this is the last time I'll talk about him, came from it's always funny about these guys that were famous in history that they were always had mates that were famous. Like, and so he was really good mates with like Thomas Boyle, who's one of the like original chemists. But he was also mates with this like guy who was a lord that then fell out of favour with the royalty, and Locke had to actually leave England because the royal family was so against him through this friendship he had. But then went from Holland. A lot of his original theories came from him writing letters to a mate who had a kid, and he was like, this is how to bring this kid up and give him the best chance at life. And oh, wow. It's just really cool that, yeah, it's one of the founding kind of documents around the theory.
All these letters.
Yeah, it's these letters this guy was writing to his mate. Yeah. So I don't know, maybe one day that's what the podcast will be.
Oh, mate, a letter.
So, yeah. Yeah, but yeah, really cool stuff. So that's he's the one that kind of built a lot of our theory, and also he talked about rewards and punishments, but I don't really like the use of punishments in this stuff. I like to think more about kind of consequences. Consequences are better than punishments. But he was one of the first people. So he did a lot of the stuff around kind of we repeat what is rewarded and we don't repeat things that are punished. Whereas I think consequences is a better way of things not being repeated and spending 95% of our energy on rewarding the things we want to see.
Yeah, that makes sense. We've talked about that a lot. Mm. Like, yeah, not punishing the behaviour.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, but he was saying that 400 years ago. So
it's all over it.
So, yeah. Some of these ideas, I think they're pretty new. And then you read stuff about that.
You go, eh.
So, it's cool. But what do you think, firstly, about you and your habits, like going back to Karate Kid, it's kind of like this habit formation, you know, you have the rituals and you believe in it and be good to karate and karate will be good to you and all that stuff. Is that how you see your involvement in martial arts and kind of?
Yeah, I do see it that way, but I see a lot of repetition. Repetition is the absolute key to any martial art from what I understand. Like it's not mindless repetition, you've got to be present to be doing it to really understand it, but it's not something that's learned as much as it is repeated is what I've found. Yeah. So you do it and then it becomes instinct, and like you're saying about your teeth brushing, like once you push through and do it. I didn't realize we were going to be talking about this, but I had this conversation this morning with my partner who's also doing jiu-jitsu, and she was like how do you do it? I said, don't try and do everything all at once, just pick one thing and just get really good at it. And
that's amazing developmental pediatric advice as well that we're going to touch on.
Well, the best guys in the world, like they say this and they mean it, they're like, I literally know 1,000 different techniques, but I've mastered probably 8 or 10. They just have 8 or 10 things that they rely on. So that's how they do it. And they're like, I am the master of those 8 or 10 things, but I can teach 1,000 things and you can choose which ones you want to put your money behind. And that's what they do.
So that is so true for breaking bad habits and developing good ones.
Yeah.
You do, you know, you pick one simple, achievable one and go. And actually they are two sides of the same coin in that the best way to eliminate a bad habit is to put a positive or healthy one in its place.
Mm. Just takes the place of it.
Yeah, it's really important. I remember you do, you know, Sober October or whatever where you don't, you know, you try not to have alcohol. And I always find that not great because it's kind of boring because I haven't replaced it with any substitutes. I'm just like, oh, there's just this thing that I've now got to have self-control not to do that's a habit instead of actually realizing that I need to put a healthy habit in its place and then reward it in the same way I reward myself with a glass of wine.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's really important. It's quite funny. You know how a lot of the people that have really good habits, and there's really interesting research on this, is like, oh, they've just got amazing self-control. But what's actually true when you look at it, most of those people, whether they're adolescents, kids or adults, is they actually just have a lack of bad habits. So they're not constantly oppressing bad habits. They just have really good habits.
Good habits that occupy their time.
Yeah, that they are part of their normal routine, that they're not like motivating themselves all day going, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And that for me, like I don't really fit in that category, but I do with running. Like I just have to run. Mm. Doesn't take me really any motivation for running. I did this morning, so I think it was 2 degrees. Pretty much in the dark, and it was I thought my fingers were going to fall off. But normally that's a habit thing. I'm not some amazingly motivated person. It's just that since a teenager I've been running 3-4 times a week, and it's just part of what I do. It's part of who I am. And it's also the other thing that's really important for us as parents with our kids is it's part of my narrative. And I think, you know, jiu-jitsu is part of your narrative, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Like it's part of your identity.
Well, yeah, I guess, yeah, part of it. I wish I was better at it if it was going to form part of my identity. I'm getting better at it.
Well, just I guess what I mean is it's a priority for you.
Oh, yeah, we'll talk about that. Like there's, I agree, like you – I agree with what you're saying. Having few priorities and just like really getting into them. That's really important, and just like prioritizing them like a priority is.
No, totally. But I think that we can help our kids develop what those priorities are for themselves.
Mm.
And instead of saying like, don't do this, you know, thinking about what are the positive narratives, and the kid chooses it. Like we don't go, guess what, mate, you're going to be a kid that's into Scouts. But, you know, Scouts is really good about providing a really positive narrative that also develops habits.
So just around this, would like something like teeth brushing be one of the good things to focus on as for developing a habit for a kid who might be like 3 or 4?
Even younger. So like once teeth brushing is a good example. It's kind of a boring one, but it's a good one because it's one that is I'm right in the zone with now where, once teeth emerge, you've got to get kids starting to brush them, not with toothpaste, but just getting in the habit of it. Yep. And as you know, like anything that you kind of force upon a kid, whether it's brushing teeth or brushing hair or, you know, you have to wipe your nose, if they don't have autonomy in it, like they don't have a say when it happens and they usually will push back against it. So really early on, you know, Evie really likes having my toothbrush now, to the point where sometimes if we went to the vet the other day, it's about 2K walk away in the pram and the toothbrush had to come because I didn't have the strength to try and take it off her. So we just cruised down the street into the vet, still holding my toothbrush. And that is really good because what I'm doing is I'm using imitation around habit development. Now, I don't expect at 14 months she's going to start taking it over and develop it as a habit, but that is a thing that she's normalizing with the start and the end of the day, is that that's a routine that happens, and that's how hopefully it'll emerge as an effortless habit for her, easier than if I just expected once she gets to 4, going, guess what, you got to brush your teeth twice a day.
Let's just say I know someone that's probably not maybe perfected the art of toothbrushing with their children that are, I don't know, let's say, or pick a number, maybe 2 and 4.
Yeah.
How would I develop that habit a little bit more consistently? Just in case they haven't already.
Great question, and it's going to make sure that I'm really practical about how we do this. So, yeah, let's use that. So remember we talked before about the cue, the behaviour and the reward.
Okay, the cue, the behaviour, the reward. Okay, good. Got it.
So imagine it's not a bad thing, but imagine they had a bad habit around they just hated going to the bathroom because they knew you were going to like put pressure on them to brush their teeth and they hate brushing their teeth.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't start there. All those people wouldn't.
So what you want to do is develop a positive cue with it, that you go, this is the cool thing that we do because we've just finished dinner and our next thing is that we're going to do something else really cool, which is the reward. So you cue them up on the reward as well,
okay,
and go, we're going to read a story and we're going to read a Bluey book. We just have to really quickly go and brush our teeth.
Yep.
The other thing that you do really early on is you give them the goal and the motivation. So okay, you say, because
yeah,
we want to have really strong, good teeth.
Like Bluey.
Yeah, like Bluey. So yeah, beautiful narrative to it as well. So goals are really important early on in habit formation, but they disappear as a motivator. So goals are really good for short-term habit development. But, you know, maybe when I was 16 and starting to run, I was thinking about a race, and I still do fun runs intermittently, but they don't really – they have nothing to do with my habit around running.
Sure.
And that's the risk, is that if you try and get kids to have good habits, like brushing their teeth around a reward or a goal that is like down the track or something, it's harder for them to tangibly tie it to that moment. go, you know, why, especially over time. Whereas early on, you can have that as your initial habit development thing about the goal is that we are going to get really good at this. Because, you know, it'll mean that we've got really strong teeth,
all right,
really healthy teeth, and you build it in. But like everything, you know, reinforce it when they do the little step of it and make it small steps as well. So don't be like, cool, go in there, figure it all out, find the toothbrush, you know, put the right amount on, wet it, do it, clean it up, don't make a mess, and then come out. And the kids are like, yeah, you must be kidding, I'm four. So you do a little bit of it. And a little bit of it does not start with the entire thing is successful. It starts with just see if you can touch every one of your teeth with the toothbrush. That's it.
I'll pass that on to someone that might need that information.
Yeah, so it's just a good one about, and then time. It takes time to develop habits, like a lot of time.
At least 2 weeks.
At least 2 weeks. So there's actually literature around this that I think it's 2 weeks to like 10 months is the window of habit formation. The more complex the task that you're trying to develop into a habit, the longer it takes. And by complexity, we mean like how much effort, how many different kind of aspects are there to it, how many different steps are there, you know, like it's, whereas if it's something that's simpler, it will take you less time.
Nice, I like it.
But still, yeah. So repetition, imitation, reward, and consequences. And that's the same for the bad habits as well.
Say, yeah, how do you break a bad habit?
So take the cues away.
Okay, so what's a bad habit for, let's say, a 4-year-old?
Yeah, so a bad habit for a 4-year-old might be, you know, that they spend heaps of time on their screen.
Okay, sure.
So they just, you know, addicted every time they're at home, they want the screen.
They want the screen, yep. Yeah. Okay. How do we break that?
So think about what's the cue. The cue is they walk in the front door after school and they want the iPad.
Yep.
So you go, cool, that's the cue. So that's an external cue. An internal cue might be they get angry and the only way I can ever settle them down is the iPad. So you go, cool, that's two examples of cues that are identified that are setting up the bad activity or behaviour, which is the iPad
kind
of going for ages. And we'll do the screen time one.
No, I love
iPads
it.
Are fine. No. So we don't sound like we're saying
no, no, we're not.
It's, we're saying it's the fine. Kind of excessive use.
Totally,
of
yeah, yeah.
And what's the reward that's happening in those two environments? The reward will be that the child gets the iPad.
Yeah.
The parent gets 2 hours at the end of the day to finally get everything done.
Yep.
Or the child that was angry, the iPad's the only thing that calms them down, the anger's gone. So that reinforces that bad habit of like the iPad just comes in. What you want to do is, like we said before, not just think about how do we get rid of the iPad, but how do we either use the same cues to cue up a better behavior and then reward it. So we come home from school.
Yep.
And what do we always do first? We pick one of these five activities to do. And one of them is like kick the footy. One of them is do some drawing.
Crafting.
One of them is, yeah. So that kind of stuff. That can be an example of it. And every family. So what we're talking about is not, we have no right to tell families what the good habits should be. We just, what we're doing, it's a bit like the fussy eating stuff. Totally. We're trying to find pathways.
Sure.
So that when families pick them and say, these are the good habits we want, this is how to build them. And the same way in when they get angry, what we want to do is find a different way for that child that's appropriate for their age to support them in that anger that is then rewarded by alleviating that anger that is in the iPad.
So now I want the iPad. It's like, whoa.
We're not so it's fine, that. Especially when it's like that. When it's like screaming, I want the iPad and like all those things, then you've probably missed the opportunity for that cue to develop into a happy behavior. But when you see the cue earlier that you go, I can tell this is a moment they get angry, I want to build a healthier habit around this, or I can tell we've just got home from school and this can be a challenging pressure point. So I want to develop a healthy habit. So I'll set up that cue of getting home is the point where I come in and I don't wait for the, where's the iPad? I come in and go, what are the five? Which of the five are you going to pick for what we do next? And that kind of choice, which is what Beck talked about last week of, you know, giving them a say in where it goes. And as kids get older, we should give them more and more of a say in what habits they move towards. It's the same though. There's this really cool thing called choice architecture. Mm-hmm. And choice architecture fits under a topic of what we call behavioral economics. And behavioral economics is like, why do we do the things that we do? Because it's not always logical, you know. And choice architecture is really interesting because choice architecture can be like what marketing people do, where they put like Mars bars at the checkouts and they go, it's really easy for you to choose the Mars bar because you, it's in front of you.
Gotcha.
You're almost subconsciously just reaching for it, throwing it in the basket and going, I should treat myself. But you can do the same in the reverse with healthy habits and simple stuff like just having cut up fruit around. People are more likely to go to it if it's kind of easy and accessible and they see it. And so your cue, once again, is, you know, you get home from school and there's some fruit here and you kind of will need to motivate the child initially, but then the habit develops as they've associated the cue.
Of coming home from school, there's fruit.
I eat some fruit that's cut up, so it's really easy. I don't have to go and get it. I don't have to cut it up. I don't have to ask mum for it, whatever. And then you reward it and then it becomes a habit. The interesting thing is around this stuff is habits are really important because we know we used to pump out lots of information about like how bad smoking is and healthy eating and making sure you get up and exercise in a day. And pretty much all of those kind of really just divulging information to the population made no impact. So people didn't change, you know, because it was much more complex than that. Just having the information about what are healthy habits that you should do is not enough. That can't be the sole kind of thing that we do. And that's what, you know, we even try and do in the podcast. We're not just sitting here kind of lecturing people about, you know, make sure your kids brush their teeth and make sure they eat fruit and make sure they don't spend too much time on the iPad.
It doesn't work.
We're going into kind of a much deeper approach to it than that. And that's kind of what's, what's really important about it.
I like it.
Mm.
So yeah, that's how you crack good ones and you crack bad ones.
Yeah, definitely. And going easy on ourselves as well, like, you know, doing it in small steps and kind of, just realizing that a lot of those automatic behaviors, because the other thing we often do is we kind of give ourselves a bit of a pass for bad habits and say, oh, it's just a really bad habit. But the good habits, we kind of probably overestimate how much of it is our effort. But actually, a lot of our good habits are because we've just developed that kind of cue behavior reward cycle years ago.
That cue behavior reward cycle you just talked about, I'm like, yes, I can apply it to my 2 and 4 year old daughter, but I'm like, I'm 41 and I'm just realizing that I reckon there's a couple of things I could really get on top of here.
Oh, I mean, it's easy stuff like, you know, realizing that the cue is that if I walk in the door, I open the pantry and there's chocolate in there, I'm going to eat it and the reward is that I get a sugar spike and feel good about myself.
Right.
Whereas if you go to the queue and be like, I just won't have the chocolate in the pantry, that's not a motivation thing that you're faced with every day.
Well, Billy, I'm not going to change going to the Savoy's and Yumi's dip, mate. That's not one I'm willing to reform. Well, that's why
you pick what habits that you want to modify a little bit.
Mine a little bit more around work, I reckon. There's a few little things I could do a bit better.
Yeah, okay. Well, we're going to reflect on this one as well.
So. Well, that's the beauty of a two-part episode of a podcast, Billy.
Yeah,
we learn the theory, we understand how to apply it, and we come back a week later.
Well, do you know the funny thing is I was already reflecting on this because I was reading about some of this stuff and just how I'm going to formulate it. You know, I always like to look back over notes and stuff like that. And, it was a Saturday night. I'd just kind of done – I'd had the beer in the bathroom – had some wine there and I was like, no, I'm going to try and develop a better habit where when I'm on my own after a long day, I don't just always have wine. And I kind of thought I'm going to put in something healthy and I'm going to read.
Vodka soda? Cool.
No, not vodka soda.
My alternative.
But yeah, so it was just quite funny that I was actually reading about, you know,
well,
and thinking about how we build better habits and then got an opportunity to do
but
it.
It all starts with awareness, right? With all the stuff we do, like, I understand. Oh, yeah. Someone says a habit, I'm like, yeah, I get it. And then I'm actually made aware of what a habit is. And then I'm made aware of it can change. Now, I'm going to go out this week. I have some pretty good intentions. And I might, you know, I'm not going to pick 20 things. I might try and pick 3 or 4. I know you should focus on one's a key, but I'm like, I'll pick 3 to see if one of them really sticks for the full week when I come back. And then I might try and assist the kids. That's what this is about, not just about me.
Yeah.
But I think that's a really good one because once you're made aware of it, like, oh, I can change that. Those things that I'm doing are so bad.
The other thing is, like, and we talk our kids through this as well, is like, how does it make you feel when you do that healthy thing instead of the thing that we were trying to get better at, you know, and focus on, you know, lifting up and giving attention to the good habit that has come in instead of the one that we were, you know, not that happy about.
And is this a good time to go to our scene we're going to learn about habit forming?
Yeah, so this is...
In a very practical sense.
Definitely. So this is about halfway through the movie where...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's kind of got to know Mr. Miyagi and is building a bit of a friendship with him, and his, you know, the insults has happened where the other kids are kind of bullying him. He's been kicked off the soccer team. And
bunch of times.
Yeah.
Beaten up on the beach.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's all this bad stuff that's happened, and he's kind of realised that Mr. Miyagi knows karate, and Mr. Miyagi's saying, come around to my house, thinking, and he's thinking he's going to get taught karate.
Yep. All right, let's play the scene.
Walk on the road. Walk right side, safe. Walk left side, safe. Walk middle, sooner or later, get the squish, just like grip. Here, karate, same thing. Either you karate do yes, or karate do no. You karate do guess so, just like grip. Understand?
Yeah, I understand.
Now ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Yes. Let's make sacred pact. I promise teach karate, that to my part. You promise learn. I say you do. No question. That to your part. Deal?
Steal?
Yes. First, wash all the car, then wax.
Wait, why do I have to wash all the car?
Remember, deal, no question.
Yeah, but
I... Right. Wax on, right hand. Wax off, left hand. Wax on, wax off. Breathe in through nose, out the mouth. Wax on, wax off. Don't forget to breathe. Very important. Wax on, wax off.
Great. So
wax on, wax off.
I know, everyone was saying that for years.
Oh, my God.
After that scene. And it is. It's a really cool principle of what we talked about with repetition and habit formation. Because what we see is what he's essentially done is got him to repeat thousands of times all these martial arts moves so that then when he throws the command at him later in the movie – and says, wax on. And he does the move perfectly. And it's kind of a habitual muscle memory kind of involuntary thing that because he's kind of repeated it so many times. And that's the really beautiful part about this movie and this scene is that what he instills in Daniel is that by repeating something over and over again, you will get better at it. But also the reason that we develop habits and we do repetition around skill development is because it is less effort to achieve the same thing. So kind of, you know, he is better now with less effort at defending himself with the wax on, wax off move because he's repeated it so much. Whereas if he hadn't have kind of waxed all the cars and he just said, do this move, he would have had to put his entire attention into that move and probably not performed it as well. Whereas now he knows it so well that it's a habit that he's developed. And so that's a really cool bit of what Mr. Miyagi does. The bit that I have to criticize him on is that he's like, this is the deal, and then gives him no reason for why he has to do all this maintenance around the house. He's
tapping into his subconscious, Billy.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm going to give him the pass on that because then when, like, Daniel's son is like, why? He's like, no question, you made deal. And kind of he says, you know, he doesn't really give him any insight into why, which is what's the goal. You know what I mean? Like we know the goal is that he wins the tournament and that's what Mr. Miyagi's thinking about. But early on in habit development, I think it would have been beneficial to say, Mace, the reason that you're going to paint this fence, wax all these cars, like scrub the deck of the, you know, the backyard is because this is going to help you have success in 3 weeks' time or however far away the tournament was. But he doesn't give it to him, which is why it's quite surprising that some
develops
cocky
so
little kid like Daniel hangs around because, yeah, wouldn't have been a great movie, but I wouldn't have been surprised if he just hit the road and said, you know what I'm not doing? I'm not cleaning all your cars without you giving me a reason. So, yeah, and to be fair to him, I do like the start bit where he's like, you know, make a commitment. He's like, don't be, you know, as he say, you'll be squashed like a grape if you stay in the middle. He's like, you either do karate or you don't do karate, but not, you know,
not
maybe.
Middle. One yeah, foot not in, one middle. Foot out. You've got to commit.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that, you know, we as adults but also should support our kids in, you know, making these commitments to habits, explaining to them why, and then supporting them in giving that opportunity with time and repetition. But remember, time alone does not make us better at anything. It certainly doesn't make us better at developing habits. We have to have opportunity through repetition.
Okay, so other than with small kids, I wouldn't mind asking about teenagers as well because the podcast isn't about me. Try to make as much as I can. With small kids, how do you support them then? So, oh, I've done 3 days of brushing the teeth and then the kids are like, oh, I'm done with this, Dad. Like, do you just have to keep trying to gamify it, make it exciting, or is it like really about reinforcing? Like, what are the things you actually do? I just love the teeth example, to be honest, because it's such a one everyone understands. You got to do it, and I personally don't like brushing my teeth, but I do it.
Yeah, so no, but it's good. No, and I mean the reality is you will have so many things that you do with the girls that have become habits that are just automated. For example, I've seen them, they're both really good in the kitchen. Yeah. When you're making stuff, like they make sure that you make sure they're a part of it.
Yep.
They, you know, are really safe in the kitchen. They're safe when they're on the bench.
Yep.
Like you've got all those things. That's not an effort for all of you when the girls are in the kitchen because you've developed really good habits about how they are in that environment. Walking into the kitchen cues them. They go, cool, this is not a time where we run around and be silly. This is a time where we really pay attention to what's going on. We're careful about what it is. And the reward is we get this beautiful attention from mum and dad. We get to be a part of making the cake or mixing the pancake mix or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why they've continued to develop that habit where Ronnie and Freddie, as a 2 and 4 year old, can roll into that room and not have to make this huge effort to have good behavior in that environment.
Gotcha.
So you've got to look around and realize there's actually thousands of things that you'll be doing that are developing really strong habits in those kids. And every family that's listening out there will have the same stuff. It's just you don't see that because you're in a habit, you know, cycle as well of you're like, cool, I've been cued. The girls are in the kitchen. I'm going to make sure I'm conscious of where they are and really safe and all those things. And the reward for you is that it's a pleasant experience. So it's not this huge effort that you're making. Whereas if you'd never let the kids into the kitchen before and then you were like, all right, guys, you're allowed to come in here for the first time, it'd be huge effort.
Mm.
And that's just with the brushing teeth thing. You're at those early days of when you were establishing that in the kitchen around healthy habits to be safe in the kitchen. So, you know, realize that you have huge capacity to do this well in your family unit. Look around and see those things and then that should be the motivation for you to get to the point where it actually isn't an effortful thing for us to all brush our teeth as a family, just like it isn't for us being really good in the kitchen together.
Yep.
So that's the thing. And it's the same with like all the adolescents and stuff. Adolescents go through this phase where they really move away from parents. But, you know, build healthy habits in that so that they connect with us, they talk to us, you know, they help out, they've got a role in the family, they support. You know, that's why chores are awesome. Chores are amazing for kids because they're really healthy, good habits. And it's like you are always the one that sets the table for us and I don't have to ask anymore because it's this really cool habit that early on we cued, you realize we were getting ready for dinner. We supported you and motivated you to be the person that set the table. And then the reward that we've given you is that we celebrate how important you are as a role in our family. And then the child doesn't need to actively realize every single time, 3 months down the track, and be celebrated every time they set the table because they've developed a healthy habit out of it. Does that make sense?
Yes, I really like it.
Yeah, so that's the cool bit. Then you're not constantly saying every night kid. For years, yeah. Going, mate, I've told you, set the table. You know, you're not trying to break the bad habit of dinner being a nightmare because you're going, actually, what we did is we took small steps at the start and said, what do we want dinner time to look like? We want it to be everyone in the family chipping in and having a role. You know, we want it to be something we all enjoy. We want to have some really cool things that we do as a family that are unique to us, best bit of the day, bit that sucked about the day, whatever. And then at the start, you need to motivate and do all those things, but it just becomes this really beautiful, healthy habit. And then we all chip in and pack up, and you don't need to keep patting kids on the back for a year because they've developed a habit and they just do it naturally. And it's a nice narrative that they have around them that meals are really important for us and I'm an integral part of this family.
Yeah, got to be honest, it's making me re-look at the old evenings a bit more because, damn it, I think I'm well recorded on this podcast as saying how much I really don't like the nights, but it's probably because I come at it in a really ordinary way.
Well, it's also because you're up at 3, 4 a.m. most days.
Yeah, they get up early. Should we work on that habit? sleep aside, I sort of have this thing where I'm like, oh, it's just not going to be any good. Oh, that's probably not the right attitude.
But think about, Mr. Miyagi. Think about if Mr. Miyagi's there in your evening, what's he going to be doing? He's going to be trying to give real basic, you know, he doesn't ask Daniel to like build the fence. He says just paint the fence because he knows Daniel can paint the fence. Mm. So pick the things that the girls and you and Henry can do and then repeat them for time and then, you know, reinforce them and go, that's really cool. You know, we all took a bit of the stuff from the dinner into the kitchen at the end of it and all that, reinforce it. And then 3 months' time, you won't have to be reinforcing it because you'll just be like...
Yeah, but even that is like you said, like don't make it about... going back to the iPad example, it's like, you know, you get home. We don't have that at the moment. We've had it in the past, but they get home. It's like, I just want to watch TV. But then we obviously figured out there's something else we can probably do in there. Hmm. But I was just thinking about how I solved that one. Wasn't textbook.
But so I want to use it on the screen time.
Yeah, can we not? Let's not revisit that one now. It's fixed people, but it wasn't a good result. But this one, though, like around dinner, because I really struggle with dinner because I don't eat, but I'm like, what if I'm just like, grab your bowls like and set the table. They have like bowls and a spoon. I don't do that. I just drop it down and go, there you go, eat. But if they're actually involved in the process a bit more, they might actually sort of be like, I got my bowl, now fill it with food. I'll be like, here it comes.
Sausages. So I'm not judging what you're doing at all. You're an amazing dad. But if you look at that and go, that's a bad habit that we have where I just get a bit stressed and I throw the food in front of them.
Don't throw the food in front of them. No, I put it down, you know what I mean? Like, they reject it.
Yeah, exactly. But you're like, I want this to be a part that we're all a part of it and it's a more enjoyable experience. Think about the cue.
Okay.
What's the behavior you want that's achievable and then reinforce it and you won't have to reinforce it for time. Okay. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, like you and I have had this conversation after the fussy eating episode about the long-term goal is the girls eating more nutritious food.
Yep.
The short-term goal that you will not get to the long-term goal without is it being an enjoyable and successful experience for them around meals.
Yeah.
You don't want to get to the bit where they're like eating whatever you say but hating it.
No. So
even if that was possible, which, you know, was a lot of my childhood, was like just holding Brussels sprouts in my cheeks for hours.
Yeah.
But you want them to be enjoying it. And that's – if you see habits that you wish were better around mealtimes, focus on that and knock it out of the park.
Yeah, just focus on that, yeah. Oh, I love it.
Pick something. Yeah. So, yeah. So, yeah, I hope that was
– Yeah.
Stuff that will
sort of trying to get out of your way. Is there anything else you're going to add? There's
zingers. No, mate. This is. I don't know how you keep me to like an hour every time.
What are we at?
But
I don't know, 62 minutes. Not bad.
Yeah.
I wasn't even looking. I was enthralled. I usually look down and Billy clocks me looking at it, going,
"Time to wrap up."
He's like, "All right."
But yeah, so I mean, we could talk about this for a long time, and there's been stuff that I've intentionally kept my powder dry about because I want to see what comes in because we're just getting amazing engagement. The fact that people listen, you know, we still get this phenomenal feedback and
keeps us going.
And then people give us really amazing questions. Like Beck was blown away by the questions.
11 questions last week.
Just got used to it, yeah.
That were distilled questions, so a few repeaters in there, but we couldn't just like distill it down to 3 or 4. We try and do to give quality of response sometimes. So,
yeah, so please like send in questions about how do we practically build, like I really love examples around this is kind of the stuff that's going on. How do we build, you know, healthier habits when this is happening? How do we approach this bad habit that we're trying to work on? Questions about anything we've talked about, like we're really happy for stuff to be challenged because we're kind of all learning this together.
Yeah, 100%. So that's going to make up part two of this episode of Karate Kid and Breaking Bad Habits. So that's going to, we'll record that a week from now. So there's some really good practical avenues this week to put down for yourself or for your kids. Try and get them going. I know I've obviously just voiced a few of mine, so I better actually make them happen this week, and I'll come back with a bit of feedback, see how it went. But questions, always critical to driving part two. So if you've got any questions, please ping them to us on Instagram. It's probably the best place to do it. We like it through there. So that's at Pop Culture Parenting on Instagram, or one word, or you can get to us via email on popcultureparenting@gmail.com. Billy, thank you so much. Loved this episode.
Thank you, Nick. That was a great chat.
Oh, it was a good chat. We'll see you guys next week.
Best judgment. We trust you.